resistance from the 48 Palestinians all the time. So it is so difficult for this population, like, to do more resistance work in terms of Gaza or West Bank, etc. So we move to resistance by existence. So we are here, we will stay here. And if we are go abroad, we will come back and marry here and make children. So it is really otherwise very, very difficult to do more than protesting or doing something. Like, I forgot the last time I went to home to visit my mother to pull off the Palestinian flag from my cell phone. So they asked me on the airport what I'm doing, why is this, etc. It was a long story. I'm not going to bother you with it. Or, like, let's talk about 2021, the so-called Al-Aqsa Prize. Just demonstrating, just really rallying. So some people receive 13 years. Can you imagine how the Zionist system repress and crush down any resistance there? So there is this, it is really very difficult, like, to do something more in collective terms, because there are no collective freedoms there. Okay, you can go to the hospital, you have insurance, etc., but having a collective and liberties on for the Palestinians or 48 Palestinians in Israel, it's almost zero. So we are about 22%, almost 2 million. So we are resisting by existence. Now, just one anecdote. Paris, who won the Nobel Prize of Peace in the 90s, he said, look, they are getting more and more, and we have to do something about it. So Paris in the 90s supported women to work. And he said, if women will work, so they will make only 4 children, not 10 or something like that. So Israel even supporting this, like, women going to work in order to keep the number of Palestinians small. And he said, but be careful. All the Mujahideens have to go to schools and tell them these women have to carry a scarf and they have to obey to their husbands and so on. So it's only about let them go work, no more than that. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe I just want to add to what you said. Thank you for this answer and for sharing this with us. I think we can't still underestimate the fact what it means to resist by existing in these conditions, because we're talking about generations who have seen the Nakba, who have seen ethnic cleansing for the past 75 years, and it's very crucial to the identity and heritage of the Palestinian people that they get taught by their grandparents and their parents the Arabic language and about their land and how to cultivate their lands and what the type of food and the type of customs they have. I think if you look at struggles of other indigenous people, you see that lots of these colonial powers try to deprive them from their identity by sending kids into Christian white families, so they forget who they are. They don't speak their native language. They don't see themselves as Native American. So they start dehumanize and normalize the injustices towards their own people. And I think Palestinians in the 48 play a big role in maintaining fractions of areas that are still present in historical Palestine that will help the next generation to keep the conversation present despite this oppression, and we can't underestimate that, I think.
I mean, since we're still on that question, if there's other perspectives from 48 Palestinians, show yourselves, yes.
I mean, I will try to provide a less poetic answer. So there are two perspectives. First of all, from the perspective of the Zionist regime, we are just Palestinians. Regardless of the citizenship, we are treated as an enemy. And you treat an enemy with the whole theory of deterrence and pacifying and control. So if we go back to the start of like 7th of October or 8th of October, Netanyahu clearly said that the internal front is a front that they are fighting on, meaning that we were counted as a, you know, war front. Now, with the month, as the war progressed, we were dropped because we were inefficient, so they declared this battle as won, basically. Thus, we can say that from the Zionist point of views, they crushed our resistance. Now, we can say existence is resistance. However, in my book, the mere definition of the word resistance is to challenge the status quo and to put pressure on the dominant power. Now, if we are in a case now where, as Fayyaq said, the Palestinian people are in an existential war with Israel in the West Bank in 48 and in Gaza by different means. In the West Bank, they use the whole apartheid surveillance regime, etc. And in Gaza, they use the F-35s. And in our case, they use more elaborate methods. And you also clearly characterized the situation well with the dependence and with the exclusion, etc. This is from the Israeli side, but from the Palestinian 48 side, there are two perspectives mainly, like simplistically. One is the perspective of the old guard, let's say, of the so-called elites. They are not elites because there were no elites left after 48. But like the political class is more like clearly adopted the narrative of Israel is now acting like a mad dog, so we should keep a low profile, basically. Like, look, they are genociding, they are ethnic cleansing, so it's wise of us to try to keep a low profile. We can demonstrate sometimes if they allow us. We can raise a Palestinian flag when they allow us. However, we shouldn't do much more because it's not wise and they will wipe us out. This is the Palestinian perspective of the political class in 48, like simplistically. The other view is of the people like me, basically, the younger classes, which believe that this narrative is outdated. We are not there anymore. We are an existential war, and we should act accordingly. However, you know, young people like me, we have no resources, or like little to no resources, both here and in the 48 especially. So there is this split between approaches. And like, as Fayyaq said, for example, the first intifada, like to have, you know, like what I'm trying to say is the popular sentiment, especially among the young people, is there, that we should resist. For example, we can damage the Israeli economy very hardly by doing a strike, by going on civil obedience, like we can really do some damage. However, now this is not the case. And as Fayyaq said, you need organization to do that. You can't just have people, like the sentiment is a necessary requirement, but it's not sufficient by itself. So as long as we don't have these popular sentiments crystallizing into a political direction that then utilizes these popular sentiments, we're not getting anywhere. And in my opinion, resistance now in the 48 is unfortunately dead apart from existing, which is also threatened. So I hope this situation changes, but this is like my summary of the situation.
We're going to take another round of questions, if there are still any questions around. Yeah.
Thank you very much. After October, 7th of October, and 7th of October opened a lot of facts in front of my eyes. And I felt very angry from the Western societies, and I felt like I don't want to live here anymore because they are just brainwashed, and they want us to stay brainwashed towards like accepting Israel as a fact, that Israel is a state, a legitimate state, and everything that it does is legitimate. And my anger is every day when I watch TV, when I watch the news in Switzerland, completely block nothing about Palestine, nothing. Even if it was, then a Palestinian killed an Israeli, and this poor Israeli is, I don't know what happened to him, or even injured an Israeli, and it's a big news in the Swiss TV. And it's nothing about the genocide in Gaza, nothing about cutting body parts of children in Gaza, nothing about women in Gaza delivering their babies after their death, nothing about the whole demolition in Gaza, that 2 million people are now obdachlos, like homeless in Gaza, and still going on. And in Palestine, there are men and women fighting for it, and I'm sure that they will keep fighting. Even their existence is alone a fight. But it's looking at Gaza now, their existence is also, it's a matter of time. It's now Gaza, the 2 million people are really being evacuated and destroyed out of Gaza, and soon it will be West Bank, and soon it will be the Palestinian cities inside the Israeli 48 territories. Why aren't we more doing inside here to the move here is not to look at the normal people, the street people, and tell them, oh, look in Palestine what is going on. No, the move here is like, hey people, are you blind? Can you look? Can you hear? Can you see correctly? Because there is something wrong going on here, and it's not neutral in Switzerland. It's completely not neutral country. I feel so angry from Switzerland politics. And the first news after the 7th of October that Switzerland is going to send weapons to countries that are in danger, and in here she meant Israel, and it's in danger from the Hamas, I don't know, the handmade bombs of Hamas in Gaza. And the other day I was watching the Olympic Games, and there was this 100 meter running, and there was one Palestinian completely blocked. They didn't give him a photo, a name, or they didn't give put his picture in front of the TV, just because they don't want to show the word Palestine on the Swiss TV. Hey, where are we? Like in English channels, there are always news and clear news about the genocide in Gaza. So what are you doing inside the politics here and inside the media here in Switzerland? Because it's completely shameful.
I think we're going to take one more question and then we'll stop, if that's fine by you. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your work and for being here. I wanted to ask so we've heard about the strategies that haven't worked or some strategies that maybe have worked, and you were saying that we need to be creative, and I really heard you, that we need to fight local fights or be creative here in whatever bubbles or spaces we might be, and I wanted to ask if there are any strategies that have maybe worked in Berlin, or just in general, what are the strategies that you have made that because of the translating, but I wanted to ask, what are the strategies that you're looking forward to, or maybe strategies that have worked in the past and that you see positive consequences of, and is there maybe something you can share with us now in the end that is a bit hopeful, just something that would maybe be a wish from you to us, because we do have a lot of privileges in this city, in this country, and I would like for us to use them well.
I think we all agree with what you said about the discourse in Switzerland, but also in the West. I think living here for 10 years, it was always clear to me that the Swiss scene is silent and silencing our voices. And now it has shown it to us in a more violent, aggressive way by instrumentalizing anti-Semitism against us, by using and reproducing anti-Muslim racism against Palestinian. And I think it's just one proof. It's not a surprise for me as Palestinian. I think it just proves to me they are benefiting literally from what is happening, because we are saying something that threatens the status quo. So they will keep doing this, and I think we need to find other ways to deal with the media, to deal with this smear campaigns that we get, and get more resilient. Because I find it sad that we, after all of these years, and after, 100 years of colonization, the colonization in Switzerland, most of the time, if I have it privately or even randomly somewhere, it starts with the legitimacy of our human rights. And it shows us how supremacist the discourse here, and how normal it is to impose this Eurocentric, democratic, shiny democratic views on us, that has been pushed by the propaganda machine. You said something important. I kind of forget, but
I think something that would be important to engage with here is to how to challenge this. You said propaganda machine. This is, some of these instruments are state-funded news outlets, and here it's also the question is having access to integral reporting, having access to news that are factually correct, that are working by journalistic standards. And I think this is not something big to aim for. It's the basic that should be happening. So I think the question was to how to really challenge the inaccessibility to this on its own.
Mm-hmm. I also want to add something, that it's not only about state media. Even if you look at the so-called leftist media here, and its positions on Palestine and everything that's been happening since October 7th, it's horrendous. I tried to publish an article with Watts, and they kept delaying for 1 month. At the end, I told them, do you know how many thousands of Palestinians have died in this 1 month while you were basically running away from an answer? You could have said, no, we're not going to publish it from the beginning. And it was a very convoluted way to escape from actually taking any real position. At the time that they platformed different Israeli voices, and they showed only the Israeli side of what's happening. So I think it's also important, first of all, to call out hypocritical voices and institutions here. And second of all, not only to focus on how to counter large or state media narratives, or within their institutions, but also how to establish a counter narrative, even within the smallest institutions that we might be in, a university, or maybe even a neighborhood news board or whatever. It can be something small, but there can be things that can be done which are closer to us. And I believe that everyone should be working on the, like, the little front that they are now in.
Maybe it's not an answer, but I remembered what I wanted to say. I think my observation is that now it's not about people not knowing about Palestine or not knowing what is happening, but it's about them choosing comfortability to and avoiding the challenges of unlearning of what the system have taught us till now. And this is what the Palestinian cause actually has revealed in a way, whether in the leftist scene, who is really radical leftist, who stands for the liberation of all people. And when it's about Rojava or Kurdistan, you see a whole fetishization, what I like to call, of the leftist scene towards these struggles because they see it... Kurdish women are fighting and they are part of the armed resistance while women in Gaza are oppressed by their men and by Hamas. I think we need to put this also in perspective when we talk about the discourse and the hypocrisy that has been reproduced a lot by these spaces that claimed our... that claimed actually what we are working for. And this is also a type of instrumentalization. So we need to question people about their comfortability, especially in this country who doesn't have, which in my opinion doesn't have the culture of revolution. If you look at history, you don't have the culture of war. We live in a bubble that even when Corona hit us, it did not hit us really the way it hit other country, and people still maintained this impression that the system is working. And I think with questioning and talking about what is happening with Palestine, we start to realize, okay, we are very privileged, and people here are very privileged, and they are benefiting indirectly from the oppressions outside of Switzerland.
I think the last question was coming from the back, and it was more towards Ramzi, and it was a question of strategies, and if you have certain strategies that you would like to share with us today that you believe have worked.
Yeah. Die notwendige Kreativität auch unterschiedlicher Ansätze und Formen. Ich wollte nur mal kurz betonen, Diana hatte den Begriff der Kreativität eingebracht. Ich finde den richtig und unterstütze den, aber will jetzt nicht auf falschen Lorbeeren sitzen bleiben. Ich glaube, das ist wichtig, und aber auch, wo sind Ansätze, wo wir an andere Bewegungen auch anknüpfen können. Ich glaube, da gibt es auch Möglichkeiten für die Palästina-Bewegung, was wir auch gesehen haben. Zum Beispiel die antifaschistische Bewegung, die neofaschistischen Parteien, die sind pro-zionistisch und haben auch ein enges Verhältnis zu Israel, nicht nur aus taktischen Gründen, um ihren historischen Antisemitismus und die Erinnerungen an Holocaust und Zweiten Weltkrieg nicht wieder zu erwecken, sondern auch, weil sie es als Vorbild sehen, diesen rassisch getrennten Ethnostaat und so weiter. Zum Beispiel Spencer aus den USA hat gesagt, I look to Israel, towards Israel for guidance, such a revolutionary ethno-state und so weiter. Ja? Also Faschisten, White Supremacists und so weiter, die auch sich das wünschen. Und ich glaube, da ist ein Ansatz, oder auch ne, mit Smotrich, Ben-Gvir und so weiter, wo man verweisen kann, na, das sind schon quasi die Faschisten, die vorstoßen. Und Wir müssen dagegen kämpfen hier. Und also da sind Anknüpfungspunkte, Kampf gegen Rassismus, für Geflüchtetenrechte und so weiter natürlich auch, aber auch der Kampf für Klimagerechtigkeit, wo man an andere Bewegungen auch anknüpfen kann, Verbindungen ziehen kann und so auch eine gemeinsame solidarische Grundlage schafft, die den Schutz von allen besser gewähren kann. Also ich glaube, das waren auf jeden Fall wichtige Erfahrungen. Nun ist die also polizeiliche und staatliche Repression gerade in Berlin, wo ich aktiv bin, natürlich enorm und das spielt auch eine Rolle und da kann man auch also die Repressionserfahrung und so weiter auch an andere anknüpfen. Ich glaube, das Zentrale ist auch der Organisationsaufbau. Das ist der Kern, ja, also dass wir wirklich uns nachhaltig organisieren und nicht nur planlos mobilisieren, sondern uns zusammenfinden. Und genau, Diana hatte auch das sozusagen das Problem der Identitätspolitik angesprochen. Also ich glaube, dass wir uns über Identitäten hinaus organisieren müssen auf einer politisch klaren Linie. Ich finde das richtig und gut, dass hier palästinensische Stimmen gehört werden, weil die massiv unterrepräsentiert sind. Und auch der Bezug zur eigenen Identität kann ein befreiender Moment sein. Es ist ein guter Punkt, dort anzufangen, auch zum Beispiel für Transpersonen, wo die eigene Identität quasi abgesprochen wird, aber auch bei PalästinenserInnen, wo Golda Meir und die zionistische Bewegung immer die Identität in Frage gestellt hat. Es ist ein guter Punkt anzufangen, aber es ist ein schlechter Punkt dort aufzuhören, finde ich. Also es muss darüber hinausgehen und wir müssen uns in Organisationen zusammenfinden, die eine politische Linie und Klarheit reinbringen. Deswegen bin ich auch also nicht nur in der Palästina-Bewegung, sondern in Sozialismus von unten und da auch in Kontakt mit verschiedenen Sektionen der internationalen sozialistischen Tendenz, bis hin auch zu Ägypten und Syrien. In Palästina leider noch nicht. In der Schweiz gibt es meines Wissens leider auch noch keine Sektion. Aber so eine internationale Verbindung herzustellen und davon auch zu lernen. Zum Beispiel in England, die Socialist Workers Party, als sie dasselbe versucht haben, was sie leider bei uns in Berlin geschafft haben, weil unsere Massenbewegung nicht stark genug war, den Slogan from the river to the sea und so weiter zu verbieten und den strafbar zu machen, dann haben sie die ganzen Demos mit Schildern geflutet, from the river to the sea und so weiter, ja, um das zu blockieren. Und da konnten sie nicht jeden mehr, also je mehr Menschen dahinter stehen, wenn du wie in London 1 Million auf der Straße hast, die hinter solchen Slogans stehen, dann können sie nichts mehr machen. Das ist wie im Betrieb. Wenn ich als einzelne Person sage, boah, nee, heute arbeite ich nicht, ich streike, dann schmeißen die mich raus. Aber wenn der ganze Betrieb, wenn meine ganzen KollegInnen streiken, können sie uns nicht alle rausschmeißen, dann haben wir eine Macht und können was bestimmen. Und ich glaube, für die Bewegung und die Verbindung mit anderen Bewegungen ist das auch total zentral. Da müssen wir ansetzen. Und genau, wer noch nicht organisiert ist hier in Zusammenhängen in der Schweiz, organisiert euch, nutzt die Chance auch zum Vernetzen, gegen den Genozid in Palästina, für die palästinensische Sache und Befreiung zu kämpfen, aber auch für die kurdische, ohne einen fetischisierenden Blick, ne, und international für die Befreiung der Menschheit und eine Gesellschaft, für die es sich zu kämpfen lohnt. Wir haben eine Welt zu gewinnen. Lasst uns genau das nicht vergessen. Wenn ich noch darf, tut mir leid, ist ein bisschen lang. Ich wollte noch eine kurze Sache zu dieser Frage der Medienmacht auch sagen und der Propaganda. Ich finde, genau, der zentrale Punkt ist, wie bauen wir eigentlich alternative Gegenmedien auf? Und das ist auch ein zentraler Punkt der Organisation. Eine Organisation aufzubauen, die die nötige politische Klarheit hat, um seine Artikel, um andere Artikel zu publizieren und klar steht, auch bei solchen medialen Angriffen, eine alternative Geschichte erzählt, eine Geschichte von unten, Kämpfe von unten und so weiter, das ist Teil dieses Organisationsaufbau und das bedarf es, weil es sind zum einen natürlich die staatlichen Medien in der Schweiz, aber auch allgemein ist die öffentliche Presse in der Hand von wenigen Konzernen. In Deutschland beispielsweise gehören 99,5% der Tageszeitung. 5 Konzerne, Springer ist einer davon, besonders rechter, aber das sind die Verhältnisse, die sind strukturell Teil der kapitalistischen Klasse und wir müssen eine Gegenmacht aufbauen, die Teil der unterdrückten arbeitenden Klasse ist und ihr Sprachrohr ist. Punkt.
Radio Lora, Perlen aus dem Archiv.